They came around one of the omnipresent sawtoothed hog's backs and found themselves on the outskirts of a ville. At first glance, it appeared almost painfully neat compared to the devastation and decay they were used to. Sturdy, square, adobe brick houses, washed in white and pink and shades of tan and brown, with heavy ceiling beams projecting from the fronts. Not a whole lot different than they'd seen in New Mexico north of the Jornada del Muerte, if better kept up. But worlds different from the urban sprawl that had occupied this area 100 years before, according to the recollections of Doc as well as Mildred. The Hummer had rolled in among the first few houses. The companions realized, with a sort of shared shock, that they'd allowed the ville's appearance of tidiness at a distance momentarily to deceive them. Obviously, the place had been built with care since Skydark, and tended with love throughout however many years it had stood. It had, however, been trashed quite recently by the looks of things. Many houses sported windows of glass, flat, clear manufactured panes, not ripply and murky from being made in some post-nuke glassblower shop, and not purple from a century's exposure to the sun's ultraviolet radiation either. Sure signs that the residents traded with scabbies working a big city, where warehouses and shops still contained unbroken sheets of glass. They were also sure signs of prosperity, since such salvage didn't come cheap. Many of the panes were broken, which was a sign bad trouble had come to the ville. The modern world was no haven of law and order, likely no more so here than in the most nuke-scarred regions of North America. But one thing about it, people who built their homes by hand and kept the trim painted and paid to put in nice salvaged windows didn't tolerate casual vandalism. You tagged, they slagged. You busted a window, they busted you. In pieces. That simple. Doors neatly painted dark red or blue, many hardly faded at all by the intense high-altitude sun, hung askew from their frames. Mismatched curtains of scabbied cloth flapped freely over glass fangs in the quickening afternoon breeze. The travelers saw no flames, but smelled smoke, and floating on the wind, the unmistakable stink of fresh death. From the gloomy depths of a hut with its front door gone altogether, lurched a mound of horror. It had no head. Rather, its right shoulder came to a point perhaps 7 feet tall, so that it had to squat down on thin, bandy legs to clear the doorway. Its left shoulder was a good foot and a half lower. Normal-appearing arms hung from both shoulders. Another arm sprouted halfway down the mutie's right side. It had a single saucer-sized eye in the middle of its lesion-covered torso that wept constant yellow pus toward a slack-lipped, jagged-toothed mouth. Jack stuck his hand out the window past Ryan's head and shot the mutie with his python. The 158-grain semi-jacketed slug hit the mutie in its single eye. A spray of fluid that looked more maroon than norm blood and some clotted pale chunks of what had to have been brains erupted from the creature's back. Clear ichor gushing from its collapsed ocular, the mutie emitted a whistling shriek from its mouth and collapsed.
Damn!
The 357 Magnum round had maybe the nastiest muzzle blast of any hand blaster he'd encountered, sharper and more painful to the ear than even the louder but lower-pitched report of a 44 Magnum. Primer fragments, blasted out between the rear of the cylinder and the frame, stung his cheek and spattered like rain on his eye patch. Ryan frowned, not just at the ringing in his ears. A hunter born and bred, as much feral predatory animal as human, Jack was hard even by the standards of his time and place. The word mercy was in his vocabulary, only because Doc had taught it to him. But the ruby-eyed albino boy had always accepted Ryan's rules, which were pretty much the same as vanished traitors had been. And one of the foremost was, no chilling for chilling's sake. Then he saw Mildred right in front of him, thrust her Checkmate 38 target revolver out her window. She fired a solo shot at a figure looming behind the busted-out window next to the door. At the same time, the hideous mutie Jack had chilled dropped what it had been holding concealed behind its back with its two right hands, a crude musket or shotgun made out of heavy-gauge pipe and wire. Belatedly, Ryan was becoming aware of movement all around them, seething out of the houses like maggots from so many beast skulls.
Fire blast! Mildred, get us out of here!
That's what I'm doing, Ryan!
The stocky physician had tucked her blaster away and was doing just that. Both hands death-gripping the wheel, she goosed the beefy wag along the narrow, rutted earth street. The way the Hummer was jouncing over the ruts, Ryan had no chance of acquiring any targets through the variable-powered scope mounted on his SSG. Nobody had been able to hold on any target long enough to take a half-decent shot.
Damn!
He hauled out his 9mm hand blaster with the built-in silencer. The WAG was lightly armored. The Kevlar and steel of its roof and sides, and its Lexan windows, should have been more than adequate to keep off the arrows, stones, and bullets the suddenly swarming muties showered down on them, especially since the blasters they were loosing off, with hollow booms and big puffs of dirty white smoke, seemed mostly to be crude homemade muzzle loaders, like the one the first muti had carried, firing big soft blobs of lead, or maybe even fistfuls of nails, busted glass, and pebbles. But the Hummer wasn't designed to be an armored personnel carrier, whose occupants were meant to do some serious fighting from inside it. It was a utility vehicle, a scout car. The heavy weapon, machine gun or grenade launcher, which had once occupied its pintle mount, had been intended to lay down a base of fire from a distance in support of dismounted infantry, and also to give it a sting and enable it to scoot out of any trouble it happened to roll into. It didn't have fancy firing ports. It had windows that had to be rolled down to allow the passengers to fire out, which, of course, let all kinds of missiles in. Nor were the muties totally limited to rocks and museum piece projectile weapons.
Oh, shit!
Fire suddenly blossomed, yellow-orange, right in their path. Flames and dense black smoke rolled in a tide up the hood to break against the windshield. Everybody ducked as a dragon's belch of flame-heated air and choking smoke rushed in at the windows to fill the passenger compartment. Then they were through the flame pond created by the Molotov cocktail. A crowd of screaming muties had rolled a battered stake-bed truck into their path 50 yards ahead.
Hang on, everybody!
Mildred cranked the wheel left toward a gap between houses just large enough to pass the Hummer. The WAG heeled way over to the right as the occupants grabbed for whatever purchase they could. Jack dropped his python inside the cargo compartment to grab a tie-down with one hand and the out-cold Christie with the other. Their tires were still spinning off tongues of fire. Then the bow wave of dust they threw up doused the burning mixture. Almost at once, the Hummer went nose down and tail up, like an angry stink bug, as Mildred hammered down the brakes. A pile of rubble, khaki-colored adobe blocks obstructed the alley.
Oh, crap, 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 crap!
Drive on, Millie! This baby will plow through!
Not on your tintype!
Mildred threw the wagon to reverse.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.